Well, I'm well connected with international investors, and right now there is an enormous amount of focus on an event that's going to happen on the 22nd of February. Not many South Africans know about this event. Corné Mulder, the parliamentary leader of the Freedom Front Plus, knows all about it. We'll be catching up from him in a moment and what might happen and why it's so important. So let's start there, Corné. The leadership election at the Freedom Front Plus. Now, you are the parliamentary leader of the Freedom Front Plus. You're not the leader of the party. Are you standing for leadership on the 22nd? International investors are saying, this is an important story, and I'll fill you in just a moment.
Alec, let me try to explain it this way. Our party, in terms of our constitution, needs to reorganize itself in terms of our federal structures every 3 years. That's what our constitution says. The reorganization should have been done at the end of November of last year, but we went through a process to amend our constitution in a number of ways and created different structures. So it was postponed until basically the 22nd of February. It's not only the leader itself that will be elected. It's also all different structures on the federal level, a party chair, a party deputy chair, our FedEx, basically the chairpersons of our 10 committees in the party, as well as the provincial leaders who've already been elected. So it's a total reorganization of the total leadership structure of the party. I've been approached in the past on two occasions in previous reorganization cycles. At that stage, I declined. I said, I don't think I want to do it, or I don't think it's the right time. We are now going into this. I've been approached by some people to make myself available. It's a decision that one needs to take at some stage. Let's see how that works out on the day. It all depends on a number of issues that we have to take into consideration. Let's see.
Are you standing then for election?
I've not taken a final decision. No, I've not taken a final decision. I have been approached by some people, and if I would decide to do so, I will then make it known.
On that day. And I'll tell you why there is a lot of interest in this. There are people wondering whether the Government of National Unity was a good idea. And should the Freedom Front Plus get a new leader who perhaps doesn't agree that strongly with the Government of National Unity and take FF Plus out of the Government of National Unity, it would pretty much force the Democratic Alliance, if it doesn't want to lose a lot of votes, because there's a lot of opposition to what they're doing there right now, to also leave the Government of National Unity, of course, collapse it. It'll have lots of implications. But how on the mark or off the mark is that speculation?
I think it's not wrong in the sense that when the Government of National Unity was founded originally, it was the right thing at that stage. But I'm very concerned about coalitions in general, and the Government of National Unity is just one of them. Because the whole notion of a coalition or a Government of National Unity is that the parties involved are prepared to make compromises and to move from their own hard positions to find common ground. And that's what it's supposed to be, and that could have made a huge difference, and it sent very positive signals to investors, to South Africans, to the companies, to the whole private sector, and everywhere in the world. However, since then, as far as I'm concerned, it became clear that parties are not prepared to make those compromises. And the ANC is going on as if it is still in full power all by themselves, pushing through. And I think they tested the other parties in the Government of National Unity. They started with Bella. They wanted to see what the response would be. And once it became clear to them that parties do not intend to leave because of that, they followed it up with expropriation. So my concern is, at the moment, the Government of Unity, as far as I'm concerned, is in jeopardy, because it seems that the parties involved are trying to outwit each other and think that they can then at the next election do so well on their own, we won't need a coalition or a Government of National Unity come around next time. Now, that is a problem. And the reality of the matter is, I understand that from the Freedom Front Plus's point of view, and that would be my view. If the FF Plus does not necessarily leave or do leave from a Government of National Unity, it may not have a direct effect on the functioning of the government itself, but it will have a huge effect on the electorate and our support base, who will see what we are doing and why we are doing, and it may have further ramifications for other parties to remain within the Government of National Unity, implementing Bella, implementing the Expropriation Act.
I had a conversation yesterday with John Steenhuisen, who said it's time to be mature, it's time to work together and to have a cool head. on the government of national unity in the one area, but also when it comes to looking at what is going to happen with Donald Trump's threats against South Africa. What is your reading on what he had to say?
The fact that Mr. Trump is now the president of the United States, and let me just step one step back. Sometimes in politics, something happens that has a profound effect on everything in the political world. The fall of the Berlin Wall, the end of communism was such an event, and there are many of those. The fact that Trump is back as United States president, despite of what happened in the past, is also, as far as I'm concerned, such an event. And you can say many things about Donald Trump, but one thing is very clear and very much proven his record. He is doing what he's saying. If he says, I'm going to do something, he is doing that. Now, I think his irritation with South Africa is not so much only about expropriation now. That is, I think, one aspect that he thinks needs to be addressed, and that was brought to his attention. His irritation with South Africa, I think, comes a long way because South Africa wants to be friends with all the rogues in the world, but they want the United States' investment, and they want the United States' money, but we want to be friends with all the bad guys, all the bad rogues out there. And I think that irritates the United States for quite a while, and President Trump has basically drawn a line in the sand. And I think our involvement in BRICS is part of that. The ANC decided to position themselves absolutely on that side of political positioning. And even in the government of national unity, and that's a failure of when this was negotiated, that the ANC simply came out and said, we're going to form this government of national unity, and with all due respect, the negotiations, as far as I'm concerned, were between the ANC and the Democratic Alliance. Ellen Zeller is right when she says it's technically maybe a coalition because they negotiated the DA with the ANC. They came up with the whole mold and the whole process. Other parties were basically informed afterwards, this is the agreement. Do you accept yes or no? And the problem was that right from the beginning, from day one, the ANC made it very clear that international relations is the exclusive domain of the ANC. They're not prepared to discuss it. They're not prepared to interact with regard to that. And we see that how it plays out in terms of their approach towards Israel, or towards BRICS, or towards all those things. And those are the kind of things that America says, United States and President Trump, why should we tolerate this?
Well, the Hague group, I don't know if you followed that announcement that came out last week, which was again described like somebody going into the cage with a lion and pulling its whiskers and expecting there would be no reaction to it. That surely must be giving you a lot of pause for thought as well on the way forward if the ANC is going to continue along this line.
No, absolutely. I'm sorry to say, I hear what Mr. Stierlesen is saying. It's a time for cool heads and let's work together. Well, the bigger party in any coalition should set the tone. And in the government of national unity, that is the ANC. I have not heard anything from the ANC since the government of national unity came into being, especially the last couple of months, that convinces me that they have that kind of approach of cool-headedness, let's find compromises, et cetera, et cetera. No, nothing at all. And the problem basically lies, everybody knew that the contentious things were those basically three bills that the ANC pushed through Parliament in a rush at the end of the previous term when they still had a majority. And instead of saying, whoa, now let's take this to the table, let's see, this is a new government. And we all want to take South Africa forward with a focus on the economy. We want to get the economy to grow. We want to create jobs, et cetera, et cetera. How do we deal with these things? Instead of doing that, there was a process, and we can talk about how the Bella process was misused. With all due respect, I was involved in the technical committee there, and it was just pushed through. And I think the president came up with a ruse, which to a certain extent pulled the wool over the leaders of the other parties there. And once that has happened, now the next one is the expropriation bill, no consultation with anybody else. And I most likely will try to do the same with the NHS.
So we've had these three sticking points, which if the government of national unity was not formed, those acts might not have gotten through Parliament. But on the other hand, what John Steenhuisen is arguing is that Julius Malema will jump into bed with the ANC. They will have their majority and things will be much worse. What's your view on that?
Well, that's been the DA's stance right from the beginning. They went to the electorate in the last election to support us to prevent the doomsday coalition. Okay, fine. So now we are in the government of national unity to prevent the doomsday coalition. But what is happening? Is the ANC cooperating with all of us to prevent the doomsday coalition? The answer is no. They are just continuing with their own policies. They're going to push those things through all along. look at the expropriation bill. The ANC pushed that now through, and we can have discussion about the contents of that bill. But can you imagine what another government could do with that when it's already now on the statute book as legislation with regard to property rights? A political party cannot be held captive because there's a worse alternative. Why can't we go out to the electorate with a constructive, positive message and say, this is what we ask support for, and not be blackmailed by some threats by certain radical elements? Because as long as you allow yourself to be blackmailed, you remain the victim of the ANC. And we all know ANC's got their own electoral conference coming up in September, December of next year. And it could change overnight. The ANC's got a reputation of recalling heads of state. They've done it twice. They may do it again. And as we go into the local government elections, I predict you'll see also the number of ANC councillors are defecting to MCAC. So there's a very unstable thing. It's no use for us to pretend that everything is wonderful, hunky-dory. We've got this wonderful pro-growth government at the moment. But it's not happening. The things that are being pushed through are causing exactly the opposite.
Corne, you are the longest-serving member of parliament in South Africa. You've played this game longer than anybody else. Just take us through the politics of what's happening here and who is trying to achieve what. Because it appears, from what you've said and from what many people have told me, that the ANC is just winning this hands down. Now there's someone coming from outside in Donald Trump to say, hang on a minute, but he's getting no support internally.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Remember, for the ANC, first of all, it's always only about the ANC. And after the election of last year, it was clear to them they are in trouble. They fell to 40%, and they were forced into this coalition in terms of a government of national unity. And then they had their conference, I think it was on the East Rand in Boksburg, and they came out of that and said, well, maybe we can return to government and to be governed alone. We just need to do what we need to do in terms of all the steps, the policies, and reaching out to the electorate with a certain specific message. We will get to a point at the next electorate where we will go back to about 50%. We don't need this nonsense of cooperation and the government of national unity. And it's absolutely the wrong approach. We will not succeed in taking South Africa forward, as far as I'm concerned, unless all the real political role players accept if we want to change things, we have to change also our mindsets. The ANC has not done that. I'm not convinced for one second that they've bought into coalition, that they've bought into compromise, that they've bought into moving in a certain direction. Now, if you come to the individuals, I think Mr. Ramaphosa is a captive in his own party. I don't think his support is all that strong. And he's got to deliver to the ANC that I have implemented the resolutions that were taken at the last policy conference, at the last conference of the ANC. And he's being pushed internally to go ahead with that. So he's pushing that agenda all the way on the one hand. On the other hand, he's, as far as I'm concerned, playing coalition partners by just sticking to his guns, by pushing these things through. And if you are paralyzed, if you say, well, I don't have a choice. I have to cooperate because if I don't cooperate, something worse is going to happen. No, take a principal stand and say, this is what it is. Take it to the world, take it to the electorate and show what needs to be done. And the ANC has not done anything, as far as I'm concerned, to prove to me or anybody else, as far as I'm concerned, that they are serious in turning against these radical elements and really want to shift South Africa in the right direction. And then you've got MK, obviously. Mr. Zuma is still out there. And I've said that in the past. I will not be surprised if Mr. Zuma in the last election did not vote for the ANC and not for MK. And why do I say that? Because he believes that he is the ANC. He believes that MK is a temporary thing, a vehicle to unite people, but there will come a time sooner than later than he can unite the ANC when he removes the current leadership and also bring back the ANC Youth League currently dressed in red. And there they are united, etc., etc. Now, if you look at the broader picture, South Africa is not doing very well and looking at all these things. And Mr. Trump has been being made aware of some of these developments and obviously the normal irritation that there is because of South Africa's positioning. We want to be the champion when it suits us with regard to human rights, fighting for the Palestinians, but not fighting for other minorities, expressing certain genocide problems with here and there, but others we just ignore because we play that game. We want to be friends with China. We want to be friends with Venezuela. We want to be friends with Cuba and Iran, etc., etc. It's not good for South Africa if we really want to get economic growth going. then that is not the place where South Africa should position itself. As parties within the government of national unity should ask themselves, are we being strung along or do we really make a difference? This week, Thursday, it will be the State of the Nation address. Let's hear what the president says. On the 19th of February is the budget. Let's hear what the Minister of Finance says in terms of economic announcements and making economic growth possible, etc. But we should have no doubt the magnifying glass of the United States has been put across and over South Africa.
I get the sense from a number of people within the Democratic Alliance, certainly the younger people, that they are frustrated by this, that they believe that they are being like a pulled by the nose like a cow. What is your sense? You right in the middle of this organization or this operation, are you getting similar feedback?
It's quite ironic, Alec. I listened to John Steenhuisen about a week ago when he spoke about the government of national unity, and he said, we are not here to be just to be used to sit in the corner and be ignored and not be taken seriously. We will not tolerate this, that, blah, 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 in the government of national unity. In coalitions that we are with the Democratic Alliance on local level, that's exactly what we say. And that's the irony of these kind of arrangements where the larger parties seem to be tone deaf and do not understand what they should do to make these things work, unless they don't care, unless they really believe they don't need to make these things work. So I understand the frustrations that are there from the Democratic Alliance's position in the government of national unity. But they shouldn't be holier than thou, because that's exactly what we are experiencing, and that's why there are problems in other coalitions on local level. But I think the broader problem is, I'm not convinced that two larger parties have accepted the implications of what coalition government really means. And it's almost as if they want to outwit each other, so that when we get to the next election, be that local government or the national election, we will do so well, we don't need a coalition and we can do our own thing. Those two parties need to get over the idea that we can do it alone. That goes for the ANC as well.
What about on a local level? We've seen significant developments in Swellendam, for instance. And I was looking back at the 2021 election, just for those who haven't been following the story. The DA won 6 seats, the ANC 4, and the Freedom Front plus 1. So that's 11 seats in Swellendam. Then there was a by-election in March 2023 where the ANC, with 37% of the vote, won the ward. So it went up to 5, brought the DA down to 5, and Freedom Front plus had the one, the swing vote, if you like. And then you got the mayor with the support of the ANC against the DA. Now it looks like things are going to change back and you're going to be playing with a DA again. What is actually happening there? Because I'm sure that would give people an understanding of how coalition politics may work in future.
You're absolutely right, Alec. Just one correction. We never took the mayorship in Swellendam. When the composition of the council changed in Swellendam, we went into a coalition of the Democratic Alliance and we became the speaker in the council and they got the position of mayor. So we were in coalition with the Democratic Alliance. And we obviously, in terms of that coalition agreement, wanted to do what we are committed to do to make a difference to the town. But once again, 5 from a Democratic Alliance, we've got 1. And there are structures and there are procedures in terms of how these coalitions should function optimally. Our experience was that that was not the case. And quite often, it's also about personalities, where the larger party should be the one that reaches out and accommodate, because without that one seat from the other party, your majority means nothing. So it was quite soon that there were friction and conflict between the mayor and between the speaker on different levels. And it deteriorated over time, where I believe it became so toxic that you couldn't successfully take that coalition basically forward. And then there were charges laid against the mayor with alleged impropriety, and that will now be investigated, etc., etc. And from the Democratic Alliance's side, and that's also strategies, nothing new. They did exactly the same in George. They tried to do the same in Matsikama. If they do not want to be in a coalition anymore, they try to change the composition of the council. Somebody resigns by coincidence from another party, and then there's a by-election, and they try to win the by-election, and quite often that same person who resigned will be then the candidate for the Democratic Alliance. They tried that in Matsikama, in that one ward. It failed because the Patriotic Alliance took the ward. It didn't make a difference. They tried the same in George. There they succeeded, and they got the majority without us. They kicked us out of the coalition. And one of the allegations is that the same was tried in Swellendam to convince, let's use the term convince, an ANC councillor to resign in Ward 3, and then there could be a by-election. It failed. So that's the huge uncertainty and unbalanced situation. In the meantime, our speaker was instructed to vote with the Democratic Alliance, but it was not an unconditional instruction. It was that we will bring a motion to that council to have all the allegations against the mayor investigated, and we will proceed with that. Our councillor was not prepared to do that. He said he's not going to vote for the mayor. He believes the mayor has got a huge problem. And he resigned as speaker. And as a matter of fact, as tonight, we will appoint a new councillor that will go back into that council. And we still maintain that because there's a coalition, we're entitled to the position of speaker. We'll take that up and we'll take it forward. And we hope that it will bring a better, more stable situation. But once again, the larger party needs to be the one that brings the stability and take the rest forward.
So the lesson there, and from what the way you've been explaining it, is the way you're seeing the world, the larger parties have not yet learned how to be coalition partners. How might that impact the government of national unity? And it's here I'm talking about the other members, yourself, Patriotic Alliance, and particularly the IFP. How do you guys get on, and do you have a similar thought process in this regard?
I think you're absolutely right. The problem is, and one must understand that psychologically for the ANC, for 30 years, they were in charge all by themselves. It's our way or no other way. And it's a huge emotional and intellectual shift and move they've got to make to understand, no, it's no longer going to be the case. And some of them want to act in the same manner as if nothing has changed. Now, you may be the bigger party, but your bigger numbers mean nothing unless you have a majority. And from the other side, no party that is prepared to cooperate and is prepared to serve in the government of national unity wants to feel that they are being disrespected. And people feel disrespected when they are not consulted, when they are feeling that they are being ignored or being pushed aside, etc., etc. Now, the challenge in this instance was that with regard to those three very emotional and very difficult issues with regard to those three bills, the ANC took the approach to say, well, these things were adopted before the election and they are already agreed. We are just going to push ahead. They come from the time when we were still in power all by ourselves. They could do that. That's what they did, and it's causing huge problems at the moment. And that brings the focus of the United States on us. A wiser way would have been to say, yes, we all know that these things were approved in the previous parliament when we still had the majority. Things have changed. Let's sit around a table and discuss this and see what can we do to accommodate your concerns. Maybe we need to amend. Maybe we need to do this. Maybe we shouldn't proceed, etc. That was not done. They were just pushed through as far as I'm concerned, no doubt. And obviously, there will be consequences. Parties must ask themselves, how long are you prepared to be abused? And what does the electorate expect? Because the expectation of the electorate out there was from the beginning very positive. This can make a difference. And I agree. I'm very supportive of the government of national unity from the start. I thought we have to participate. You have to be around the table to make a difference. But if you are not being listened to, then you must start ask questions. What is the purpose and why are you there? Those are the kind of discussions that we must have, and I think all the parties will do that internally.
So there's no point yet in walking out unless you've exhausted those conversations. John Steenhuisen was talking about a reset. Are you talking the same language?
Well, a reset would mean, under the circumstances, I'm not aware of any of the other parties in the government of national unity that has taken a hardline approach to the government of national unity and tried to say, our way or the highway. None, except the ANC. It started off with the ANC saying with regard to international relations, hands off. That is not that simple. Why? What gives them the right to say international relations is just our affair if you're a minority in the government of national unity? The ANC is also a minority. They don't have the majority. That was allowed in the negotiations. I think that was a huge mistake. We were not part of those negotiations. It could never have been accepted. But, and it goes back to our system because our constitution and the process forced people to reach an agreement 14 days after the election. This is why these things are happening. It's a failure. As a matter of fact, the evening when Mr. Ramaphosa was elected as president, nothing was signed yet in terms of an agreement. So he became the president with a vote of the Democratic Alliance and other political parties. But nothing was cast in stone at that moment. That's a vast mistake. And looking back, so I think all other parties, I think the Freedom Front Plus ourselves, we are committed to make things work. But if the ANC's approach is going to continue as is, and they are pushing these things through, and those things, we are very concerned. Bella, we haven't even spoken about that. For the Freedom Front Plus and our constituency, it's a red line. Bella is a huge problem. And I think people know that. Then I come to expropriation without compensation. And if you look at what's happened there, I served on that committee in Parliament a couple of years ago. We were busy for more than a year where the ANC tried to amend Section 25 of the Constitution to make possible expropriation without compensation. I spent more than a year in that committee on a daily basis. In the end, we succeeded to prevent that. The ANC couldn't amend Section 25. They could not get a two-thirds majority, and Section 25 remains as is up till today. Then they just took another route. They went and they wrote a law, an ordinary law, where they just needed a 50% majority to make expropriation possible. And they put into that a clause that says it can be done with no compensation, which means expropriation without compensation. So they've now turned the onus on individuals out there, and they will try to use that bill to expropriate somebody's property without compensation and then sit back. It will be up to that poor individual now to approach the constitutional court and say, listen, look what has happened. I think it's against the provisions of Section 25 of the Constitution. And they will sit back and wait and hope that the constitutional court make a pronouncement to say that their bill is right. Huge implications if you talk about economic growth, if you talk about private property rights, etc., etc. But that is still going ahead with the ANC, and they say, well, the original sin needs to be addressed, land. And we should have a discussion about land and what people can do with land and what we really need and what the needs really are. People need jobs. They need growth. That's what we basically need.
Why are the Afrikaner people generally so supportive of Donald Trump? And I know that's a heck of a statement, but pretty much everywhere I go, when I talk to my friends who are from the Voorvaders as Afrikaners, they love Donald Trump. They kind of can relate to the man. Why is that?
I think there are, well, let me first say this. Obviously, people will differ, and one can give your opinion in terms of many things that may not be acceptable with regard to the individual person on a personal level for whatever, and that's a different discussion. But when it comes to positioning in terms of policy, in terms of his approach, people, Afrikaner people, many of them feel absolutely aligned and inclined with him. Why? First of all, he speaks directly. That's a typical Afrikaner trait. We don't go around the bush. We speak truthfully, directly. This is what we think. This is what we stand for. Donald Trump is doing that. He's saying that. He's not being politically correct. And I think Afrikaner people are sick and tired in this country of the political correctness and the wokeness. That's the second thing. Thirdly, I think the fact that he comes out and says America first, no one should be as interested in your own affairs as a people or a country should be themselves. If Afrikaner people think that somebody will come from abroad, the Pope or whoever, and say, you've got a problem, we will solve it. It's not going to happen. You have to take responsibility for yourselves. That is what Trump says. I focus on my own people, what is the values and what is important for us. And I think we Afrikaner people are associating with that. They feel it's a strong, direct message. He's doing what he's going to do. And that focus on what is important for the American people first, I think we can relate to that.
Can he make a difference again in South Africa?
Oh, yes, no doubt. He's going to make a difference. He is going to make a difference. It's very easy for South Africa and the ANC to make certain pronouncements and this and that and the other. The United States is a country that you need to take seriously in terms of their power, never mind military power, economic power, etc. And it shouldn't be a problem. We shouldn't see South Africa, shouldn't see Donald Trump in the United States as a threat or a problem. It's an opportunity. It's a huge opportunity. But then the ANC must come over their ideological problem where they feel inclined as a knee-jerk reaction towards Russia, towards Cuba, towards Venezuela. These were our comrades when? 40 years ago? 50 years ago? Get over that and see that there's a bigger world out there and we can have the benefit of that And if you really want to make South Africa a modern, thriving economy where people really have jobs and don't depend on social security, and the United States is prepared to reach out and assist, why are we not taking that? Why are we not doing that? And I'm not saying, first of all, from my perspective, that we should choose United States above everything else. No, let's choose South Africa. And that's what Afrikaners feel very strongly about. Us first, our own position as South Africans first, Afrikaners in our own mind first. We don't have to choose for BRICS or the West, but we should do what is in the best interest of our own country and reap the benefits of both. But you cannot run it with the bad ones and think that it won't have consequences on the other side.
You haven't even mentioned Iran yet, which allegedly bailed out the ANC.
The ANC, exactly. That's part of that connection that comes from the past.
And Iran being very much enemy number one for the United States. Cornet, how are you seeing the world? Give us a scenario over the next 3 years, 3-4 years of the Trump presidency. How are you seeing the world change as far as South Africa's context is concerned? Now, you did mention earlier there is the budget. There's a State of the Nation this week. There's the budget coming up on the 19th, which could also have problems. The DA has already said, if you're going to bail out Transnet, we're history, or at least they've proposed that. It might not be the case, but that's the suggestion. Then you've got your leadership conference in the Freedom Front Plus on the 22nd of this month. And of course, there's pressure coming from the United States as well. So paint us a scenario of how it could work out.
Let me say, the fact that President Trump is now the president of the United States and the free world, that's the reality. That's absolute reality. And what he's going to do in the next 4 years, he's going to change the outlook internationally to a very large extent. Rein in China, put pressure on Russia and Putin, North Korea, all those things will happen. I've got no doubt. There's one concern that I have, and I don't know if I even can say that. The United States are so divided and so split in terms of absolutely hard positions. We've seen two attempts on President Trump's life before the election, and I am really concerned. I don't hope we get into a situation where we have a repetition of things that has happened in the past. But even if that happens, and God forbid, the Democratic Party in America is in a very difficult position. And with J.D. Vance and other people there, it seems the Republicans will be doing their thing most likely for the next 12 years. People must take a long-term view. Because after President Trump concludes his term of 4 years, the Republicans are very likely to take the White House again. And J.D. Vance is most likely will be the guy for two terms. So we are talking maybe of a 12-year period, which gives an opportunity, as far as I'm concerned, for South Africa, because it will bring stability, especially the approach from the United States of Mr. Trump to will not want to get involved in conflicts and wars, etc. That's wonderful in terms of bringing peace and stability in the world, which could assist with economic growth and job creation. But if you look at South Africa, we have a situation where either we are now going to start to succeed or we're going to become a really failed state in that instance. And the opportunities are there. They are really there. I think the goodwill exists among South Africans. Yes, we have a group of people I would call on the radical left in terms of coming together around MK, EFF. It's almost like a gravitational hole that pulls everybody in there. And what is their approach? Their approach is to defeat the current constitutional dispensation. And it was predictable. 30 years after the agreement in Kudesa, people will come along and say, no. We were not part of that agreement. We were sold out. We want to tear that whole constitutional dispensation down. That's what they all do. And we have to prevent and defeat that. But you can only defeat that if you, on the other hand, you keep the constitutional dispensation intact and the things you want to achieve can be done within that dispensation. But then you need to bring all the people of reason together in a reasonable way. It can only be done in terms of cooperation, in terms of compromise, in terms of governments of national unity and coalitions. But we still need the leadership of parties to take the step and to understand it's not about me. It's not about my party alone. There's a much bigger picture playing out there. And in order to do so, let's take hands and really do what is necessary to take the country forward. My serious concern at this moment is I don't see that kind of leadership. And that is the problem,
and it puts us all in jeopardy at this stage while radical forces are rallying on the side. And with the United States going to play that important role with economics in the whole world and bringing a peaceful thing, we should reach out and take a part of that and use that also to our benefit to get our economy growing, to show people what the way forward could be. If we do not do that, we will play into the hands of the radical grouping coming together like a thunderstorm to destroy and defeat the whole system that we've succeeded in bringing stability in the last 30 years.
In our conversation over the last 35 minutes, it seems almost as though Cyril Ramaphosa and those close to him need a Damascene conversion of some type to be able to follow the advice you're giving them.
Yes. The problem is this, and I know it's a cultural thing in terms of cultural leadership. I'm talking about political culture. The ANC, Mr. Mandela, was, as far as I'm concerned, the last ANC president that had a vision and a view of himself, of his own. He could get up and say, this is my vision, and I will do that, and people followed him. But there's a culture within the ANC that you are just a deployee of the ANC structures, and all the presidents since then, with all due respect, have been paralyzed politically because you have to do a balancing trick between all the different factions, the Women's League, the Youth League, the trade unions, the South African Communist Party, SANKU, you name them. And because of that, I believe you sit with leaders who are so paralyzed in terms of a vision of their own, in terms of taking the stance and stand up and say, I give leadership, that we do not see that. And with all due respect to Mr. Ramaphosa, he needs, as far as I'm concerned, you're in your second term, Mr. President, stand up, give strong leadership to your own party, and the majority of good South Africans will follow that lead. Take a bold step and go into the future.
Corne Mulder is the parliamentary leader of the Freedom Front, plus I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.